Blog Talk Radio.
Here come the Volunteers. Wherever you listen throughout the world, it's football time in Tennessee.
Checkerboard Radio with Lee Crow and Andrew Durago. Checkerboardradio.com.
We are back. We had a weird month with May, with Mother's Day, with Memorial Day, so we're closing out the month strong. I'm Andrew Durago. Joining me, as always, is Lee Crow. This is Checkerboard Radio and checkerboardradio.com. Lee, how are you doing today, man?
I'm great, man. Just enjoying the day. I'm dreading a long work week next week after that short one we had this last week. So, but it is what it is.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to talk about today. You know, we took the week off partially because I was out of town for Memorial Day. I went down to New Orleans. I still haven't put it up yet, but I am going to put up images and the story that I'm going to tell right now from New Orleans. We were walking down Bourbon Street on Saturday last week. I was texting Lee about this. And, you know, there's bachelor parties and bachelorette parties. You know, a lot of them just had, you know, matching T-shirts, you know, team whatever, team bride, you know, just stupid stuff like that. But then this one bachelor party walked by me and my family, and they took the cake. These guys were in full-on mid-90s WWF. I'm saying WWF because, I mean, this isn't WWE. It was WWF costumes. Rowdy Roddy Piper was leading them in costume, stopping cars and directing traffic so these guys could walk through. They had a Roddy Piper. They had a Hogan, a Bret Hart, a Sergeant Slaughter, Dude Love, Mankind, Ultimate Warrior. But the fun part about these guys is they noticed my fiance's sister's fiance. I know that sounds complicated. He had an orange Volunteer Traditions visor on, and one of the guys turned and said, "You guys Vol fans?" And we said, "Yeah." And I said, "Sweet, we're from Knoxville." And they busted out the, "I said it's great to be a Tennessee Vol chant," twice in the middle of bourbon. I tried to get a bite of it, but they not to incriminate these guys, they ducked into a club before I was able to get a vine of them chanting it. I won't specify what kind of club it was, but you can imagine a bachelor party. But I will have pictures up of that. And because, I mean, these costumes were great. I sent them to Lee when I was out of town. You were impressed by the Sergeant Slaughter one, weren't you?
Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter is the undisputed winner, in my opinion. I didn't see the Dude Love. I didn't see the Dude Love one. I think I need to go back and look at those again. If I still have them on my phone, but the Dude Love, I didn't see. I'd like to have seen that.
I sent you about half of what I have on my phone. I mean, I was snapping these pictures as fast as possible, but you know, the days prior I'd been in New Orleans, like I said, you know, bachelor and bachelorette parties were wearing just like coordinating T-shirts. These guys did it right.
Mm-hmm.
But
how random to go 3-4 states away and run into Vol fans. I mean, it just, I don't think you would have seen that like just 3 years ago. You know what I mean? Maybe the brand is coming back a little bit.
Well, I did see a couple guys, and I took some pictures of them because I was making fun of them, because one guy was wearing, and they were all white guys. One guy had a LeBron Heat jersey on. Another guy had on an Eagles Michael Vick jersey on. And then their other two buddies had Saints jerseys on. And one of the guys that was rocking a Drew Brees jersey was stumbling down the street. And I was like, "Look at that idiot." And then he turned and I got a better look. He had a Tennessee hat on. And I was like, "Man, come on."
Awesome.
I was like, don't make us look bad down here. But
we don't need any help, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun stuff to talk about today. Devontae Brooks, tight end, 2016 commit. Lee and I probably have very similar opinions on him. If you haven't heard, tore his ACL for the second time. Same ACL. We're going to touch on that. The new SEC transfer rules and how that's going to affect UT. A little bit of probably me griping and complaining at, you know, the sun coming up, but Homer Media has come out in full force this week with making fun of other coaches in the SEC and, like, adding them on Twitter. I want to talk about that. But
yeah,
one thing
in particular, Ole Miss had the unfortunate tweet of having some rings for their drubbing in their bowl. They got absolutely just boat race in a bowl. They got rings to commemorate it. So, Homer Media wore them out over that. So,
yeah, the one thing that Lee and I are both very excited about, though, is, you know, we've tweeted about it a little bit this week. We've got big news on the way. A lot of people listen to the show either live by calling in or using the Blog Talk Radio link or listening to the podcast that we post on checkerboardradio.com after the show. A new way that's going to be available for you to listen to Lee and myself and Checkerboard Radio, we are going to be a featured show on vSporto. It's a free app. These guys make apps for just about every major college team. They are launching a ball sport radio app coming up in the next week or so, and we will be one of the featured shows on there. Make sure you check out checkerboardradio.com because I'm waiting for their representative that I've been talking with about this to send me a list of the other guys that are doing their shows on this app. You know, it won't be live, but it gives you another way besides our website or iTunes to immediately pull up our shows and take a listen. You know, we appreciate everybody that does listen, but I mean, these guys have Notre Dame, Texas, Arkansas, Ole Miss, basically every SEC school, plus some bigger schools like Michigan, Ohio State, but we're really excited to be a part of that team. I do know a couple guys that are going to have shows on there, including, you know, Dave Hooker, who's on 1180, local guy Nathaniel Rutherford is going to have a show on there. A lot of good guys that cover the Vols and bring great insight and opinions to Knoxville and, you know, Vol Nation.
Right.
So Lee and I are excited to be a part of that.
Absolutely. And the best thing about it is you're getting all kinds of opinions and coming from different directions. And it's just going to be exciting. You're not going to hear, like, basically a continuation of one show to the next, like you would hear on some other stations all day long. You know, I'm not going to name any names, but you hear basically the same theme on some of these stations all day long. You're going to be coming from different angles on this app, and I'm kind of excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, and the best part about it, you know how much it costs?
$3.99. $0.99 is always the best.
$3.99 is the best deal you can get. Be on the lookout. Lee and I will tweet out more information once the app gets launched. It should be in the next week or so. But we're really excited about it. And like I said, we do appreciate everybody that does tune in to us. Lee, one of the big things that happened this week, and I want to kind of double up on this, one, the Devontae Brooks injury. I just mentioned it. He tore his same ACL again. He did it last year, so he's going to be out for his senior season. 2016 tight end commit. And I know it's been talked about already in, you know, local Knoxville radio, but you and I don't pull punches and sugarcoat it, so I think it's better that you and I discuss it. So the big question is, and I put it on Twitter, should Tennessee keep that offer out there? Should they honor that commitment?
My initial snap reaction, obviously, is, you know, guy's injured. Tell him, you know, hold up on the commitment for a little bit. We'll see how the surgery goes. Got a long way to National Signing Day, but that would not be a for sure take for me at this point, obviously. Now, if they look at the knee, or if they know he's doing the surgery, or if they even perform the surgery like they did for Chance Hall, they have their own doctors perform the surgery, and they check him out, you know, I'm going to let the kid in. I mean, it's not really going to be a position of need where they're going to expect him to contribute right away anyway. So it's really, like, based on that as far as I'm concerned. But, like, my snap initial reaction is, hey, this guy's got a bum knee, you know, pull the scally. That's just because I'm heartless, but I mean, if they look at it and it looks like it's going to be a pretty good deal, I mean, like Chance, I didn't expect Chance Hall back this quick. And obviously, that was a little more severe, I think. A ruptured Achilles is worse than an ACL, I would imagine. So, you know, it just depends on the physicians and how the surgery comes through and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I know the initial reaction is just, oh, you can't take him, he's got a bum knee. But what do you think?
Well, the way I look at it is I look back at Butch Jones's time at Cincinnati, and I don't know if it was just the options they had and the players they had on the field and on the roster, but Butch Jones at Cincinnati loved tight ends. Pause. but the thing about it is, if you look at those Cincinnati numbers, I think, you know, 2 of the 3 years he was there, tight end led in receptions. Their leading receiver was a tight end. Somebody can fact check it for me. I'm probably wrong, but I know at least 1 year a tight end led them in catches and yards. They like a guy in that offense that can, you know, run up the seam, run down the hash marks, you know, catch a 10-yard out up there, throw a quick seam route, and, you know, make plays out there. And they've tried doing that here, and Tennessee just doesn't have the tight ends right now. Ethan Wolf's getting there. He's got a little bit of a drop seed issue. I've said it, you know, a year ago with Ethan Wolf, and he's, you know, I always thought Ethan Wolf was more of a blocking tight end. I thought Daniel Helm was the better pass catcher. Obviously, Daniel Helm is gone now, got homesick or whichever version of the story you want to believe. Watching film a year ago, Daniel Helm, to me, was the better receiving tight end option over Ethan
to me, To me as well. If you look at the tight end depth after next season, you know, barring any kind of unusual injury or another transfer, you're still going to have, just by the numbers, you're going to have Nico Kramer. It's going to be a redshirt sophomore. You're going to have Ethan Wolf back. He's going to be a true junior. You're going to have A.J. Brandisill still standing around there name searching as a redshirt junior. And you're going to have Kyle Oliver as either a redshirt freshman or a true sophomore. So, number wise, and you know Oliver's an athlete. So you got one of those guys. You said one of those seam guys. Like you said, you got Oliver. He could potentially be that coming in this year of a 4-year practice. They don't really necessarily have to take Brooks. It's just a matter of if they want to take him and hope his knee's good and he can play 2-3 years down the road. So. It's really up to that, in my opinion. If they want to do that, hang on to them, it would be acceptable. It's really just about what they need at this point because, I mean, it's not like this guy's going to have to play in 2016. He's not going to be suiting up at the Battle of Bristol in any event, most likely, as a true freshman, even if he was a whole true freshman, not one with a bum ACL.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's really interesting because Tennessee right now, I'm looking at it on 24/7, Tennessee's offered 8 tight ends for the 2016 class. Devontae Brooks obviously committed. The other guys that they've offered, Jamal Pettigrew, Jake Houseman, Caden Smith, Isaac Nauta, all committed to LSU, Ohio State, Stanford, Florida State. The only 3 guys they've offered based on, you know, the offers that 24/7 knows that are left are Nasir Upshur. You know, that 24/7 has him as cool for their rating for the Vols. Jacob Mathis, same rating there. And then the 3rd guy, and this one's an interesting guy, Lee, you and I talked about him on the phone the other day, Darrell Middleton out from here in East Tennessee. He's been offered
Oak Ridge.
Basically, he's at Oak Ridge now. He's been offered by Tennessee basically since his freshman year of high school. 6'6", 250, very talented player, and the thing that kind of worries you is 2 things. 1, Alabama sneaking in on him. Alabama offered him at the beginning of March. That he named him his leader at the beginning of this month and visited them at the beginning of May. The thing about Darrell Middleton is he's kind of a problem field, nothing illegal, more of just character issues and grade issues. He's transferred schools multiple times here in East Tennessee. I know for one instance, I think it was when he was at Powell, he brought his cell phone to practice and walked off the practice field to just call a buddy, and that's what got him in trouble there. If Tennessee is actually still strongly pursuing him, you know, is he a replacement for Devontae Brooks if they decide to tell him to, you know, look elsewhere? Me personally, I know, you know, you've assumed my thought on it, and I agree with what you thought I would say. I say pull the offer. Yeah. You've got a guy with that's torn the ACL twice, and Tennessee is not in the position where they can, you know, bring in 35 guys in the recruiting class. I know that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. The 2016 class is going to be a lot smaller than what we've seen the past 2 years. And it's not in a – I don't think Tennessee is in a position where they can say, hey, let's hope your knee gets better. I mean, it's one thing for, you know, a Preston Williams who tore his ACL. That's, you know, the top receiver in the country versus, you know, I'm not knocking Devontae Brooks. I think he's a great talent. You know, a four-star tight end. He's the number one tight end in coming from D.C. But at the same time, two torn ACLs, yes, I agree with you. If the offer still stands and they honor the commitment, he'll more than likely redshirt his freshman year. But at the same time, if you've already torn that thing once or twice, excuse me, it's going to happen again. It's never going to be 100%.
Yeah. And there's another option also in state. I mean, he's been committed to Ole Miss for quite a while. His name's Gabe Angel. He's right there in Cookeville. Pretty good sized kid. He's like 6'3", 230, 235. I mean, he's a four-star kid on Rivals. He's another option in state. I mean, because these guys continuously pursue people even when they're committed, as they should. They got a bunch of committed folks on campus this weekend, I believe, as well. So that's another option. He's right there in town. I'm sure they could work that into some kind of advantage if they needed to. But he jumped on with Ole Miss early after Devontae had already committed to Tennessee. So they have a couple of options of tight end if they must get one in this class. I know you said Butch likes tight ends, but they could whiff on a tight end in this class and be okay, in my opinion. They would be all right. They got enough in the cupboard now to withstand another, you know, tight end free class, I would imagine. If the number's going to be small, maybe 18, 19, 20 kids the most in this class, looking at the sky figures like as we were before the show. But, I mean, do they really even need a tight end in this class? Is that a must-get in this class? I would say no. Must-gets in this class would be running back, wide receiver.
Well, and that's one of the fun – that's one of the things I really like about 24/7 is you can pull up every offer, every reported offer that – a team has made to a team. And, you know, you mentioned that the 2016 class needs to focus on wide receiver. Tennessee has 47 offers out to wide receivers.
And that's not enough. That's not enough. So. And,
I mean, the closest group position-wise to that 47 is corner at 23 and offensive tackle at 28. But 47 wide receivers. If you look at who's going to be gone next year, you're losing Pig.
Yeah.
Receiver class, and then you're also, you know, if he has a great year, you lose Marquez North. You're losing Jonathan Johnson. Not a big deal. Von Pearson, if he returns to the team, and we'll get into that later on. I mean, if he's back on the team, he's a senior, and he's gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
It's
going to
be ultra thin. The entire roster after next season. We'll say North does ball, like you said, and goes pro. You'll have Josh Malone, true junior.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Smith, redshirt junior. Jason Kroon, redshirt senior. Cody Blount, never mind. I'm not even going to mention that. Disregard. Those are the words you have. You have Mahone and Smith, and you know the incoming freshman this year of Preston. So that's all you got. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Bruce and Perry. I assume they're going to be wide receivers, but we really don't know. I mean, they could end up anywhere. They're tweeners. So, I mean, as far as true wide receivers, you're looking at like 2-3 at the most still on the roster next year.
I mean this in the nicest way possible, but not really. Cody Blank needs to, after this season, you know, like you said, he's going to be a redshirt senior next year. He needs to transfer.
for the I agree. Well, I'm sure that discussion is going to be had because, like I said, if you go on, if any just good, just you don't have to be a scholarship or recruiting expert to do this. Just go on the UT Sports website, pull up the roster, sort it by year, go through there and count all the scholarship kids. You know you should know all the scholarship kids. There's on the current roster, which will change dramatically tomorrow when everybody enrolls for summer session. But today, there's 63 scholarship kids on that roster. 9 of those are true freshmen. If you add in the other 20 that'll be there tomorrow, that's 83. And you've got the transfer punter, that's probably 84. Maybe Abernathy is 85. I mean, they're right on the number. There's no room for error. So guys like Cody, they could probably go ahead and graduate and leave. They're going to be asked to do that. Or transfer, you know.
And it makes sense. Like I said, I'm not trying to knock the kid. I'm sure he's a great kid. But Cody Blank, you know, you've got, what, one career catch. You tore your Achilles last year. I'm not going to be shocked if he gets pulled aside and a coach tells him, hey, you know, we appreciate everything you've done here. We appreciate that you're a local kid, but at some point they're going to tell him, you know, you're not going to play.
The numbers are what they are. Yeah.
And UT's website really doesn't do him justice on his bio because they have the career highs and they put catches 1, receiving yards 43 against Bama in 2013. Today's fun trivia, though, what is Cody Blank's real name?
I have no idea. That's not his real name?
Dakota.
Nice. That's nice.
He does
have fantastic hair. He has hair like someone that would be named Dakota. That hair is fabulous.
One of the things Lee and I were talking about, and I was hoping to be able to write it for Checkerboard Radio earlier this week, but I should be able to do it tonight or this afternoon, is with the freshmen, the last group of them, you know, showing up on campus on Monday or starting to check in and get registered over the weekend is, you know, we've seen with Tennessee that a lot of freshmen play very soon. We saw it last year. Half of them were on a billboard in Nashville. Is that still up in Nashville, Lee? The mid-state billboard?
I haven't seen it in a while. I don't think it is. I haven't seen it. Of course, they have those little electronic billboards that rotate, you know, the
LED ones. And plus half those mid-state guys have transferred, so good job, guys. Oh, transferred or been arrested. So, but the one thing, Lee and I, and we're going to kind of do a modified version of it today, just kind of rapid fire like we do when we go through lists, but I'm going to have something more extensive up on the website later today, is which of the incoming players for the Vols will contribute the most or are most likely to contribute? I'm going to cherry pick names. We'll still cover them. And these are no particular order. We'll touch on them. Obviously, to me, the number one is Alvin Kamara.
Yeah. Agreed.
There's no doubt that he is. If he's not number one, he's definitely the number two back. I still maintain I think he gets more carries than Hurd this year. I think he gets more opportunities to touch the ball.
I think he will, too. He has a little better repertoire, in my opinion, to use. He can use him in several situations. He has a little better skill set that can do a lot of things. He's a little more versatile than Hurd. Hurd's good, but I'm just saying he's a little more versatile. He can do a little more things, probably better receiver out of the backfield. And you can use him in different formations, put him in motion, put him out, spread him out wide. You can do a little bit more stuff with him than you can with Hurd.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a one-two punch. I think he's a better pass catcher. I think he's going to be, you know, last year I called it the Hurd swing, that swing pass that they threw to Hurd every other play. It was either that or then the pick sweep. So we'll see what happens with that. Just cherry picking names. I'm kind of going to go through alphabetical order. Excuse me. Micah Abernathy. The way I'm going to do this, Lee, is there's 29 guys incoming on the commitment list on Rivals. So
yeah.
The way I want to do this is that, well, we won't number them. Obviously, we have Kamara number one, but on that scale of 1 to 29, let's just throw them where you think they would be contributing-wise. Micah Abernathy, where you got him?
Mid-20s. He's not. I don't think you'll see much of the field. Maybe some special teams work. I'm not really sure how he is in the return game, but getting here late. Well, not late, but he's getting here in the first session of summer, and he's not an early enrollee. I don't see a whole lot of contribution there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. Mid-20s, as long as Emmanuel Mosley keeps doing what he's doing. Another guy we're going to talk about in a second, Justin Martin. I think Justin Martin's pretty much pegged in as the starting corner opposite of Cam Sutton once he gets here. I think he actually is here now. He tweeted a picture of him and Kyle Phillips and Preston Williams together. Another guy, Denzel Boulware, offensive lineman.
He'll redshirt, learn the system, put on some weight. He's low 20s, I'd say, probably.
Yeah, I've got him redshirting and, you know, sitting back and learning. Next guy, actually, this guy I'll probably put the teens, maybe around 9 or 10 even, Andrew Butcher. I think he plays this year.
Well, I mean, he just got some injury news. I know that. He's got some knee issues. Some news came out this week that they're concerned about a knee issue, and they haven't really gone any deeper into that. But I guess we'll find out here soon, you know, the severity of it. I guess my thoughts on him would depend on that. I'm not really sure, but I like the kid. He's, you know, he's a solid athlete, good in the classroom, but he's got to go through some in-depth medical tests to see what's wrong with his knees here. Is what I just came out this week.
Mm. Well, and a lot these next couple of guys, I'm going to group them all together because they are the same position, and it's a toss-up, but you and I think we know when a red shirt's going to get burnt. Quentin Dormady, Sherron Jones, and Juwan Jennings. Me across the board, I've got Juwan Jennings 29, dead last. He's not going to play this year. He's going to redshirt. I honestly put Sherron Jones a little bit higher in terms of contributor. I mean, he's going to be in the 20s because I think he's going to be the backup behind Dobbs. I think he is better than Quentin Dormady. Dormady is obviously the number two. You saw that in the orange and white game. Dormady, you know, I can put him and Jones one and two together, probably, you know, around 24, 25 of our list. And just because they're going to be the backup, you know, fingers crossed, Josh Dobbs doesn't get hurt. But those guys, one of them is going to play this season, and it'll be against, you know, probably Bowling Green in the fourth quarter. It'll probably be against North Texas and Western Carolina. We're going to see a backup quarterback play some significant minutes this year because this team knows they're good. I think they're going to put points up fast against the lower teams, the non-conference ones, excluding Oklahoma, just because I think this coaching staff knows if Dobbs gets hurt, the season's over.
It would be pretty cataclysmic, but I wouldn't say it would be over. I think they'll probably still squeak out 7 wins without Dobbs. That's how favorable I think the schedule is, and how favorable I think the East.
Hold on.
That's right.
Like right now, if Josh Dobbs blew his ACL taking a test right now or something, and was out for the year, you'd still have Tennessee at 7 wins.
I do. I really do.
I've heard some stuff about
how much a quarterback means to a team, how much a dynamic like, you know, SEC East caliber. SEC West caliber all-star quarterback is. And he's usually good for like a game and a half. I have him winning 9. So, yeah, 7 is about right. That's just how I have him. That's the way I'd look for him. They'd be a lot more run-heavy. And they've got the quarterbacks to be run-heavy. So,
I've got him at 8-4. I'm still debating between 9-3 or 8-4, but if Dobbs went down for the season right now, I would put Tennessee at 6-5.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you look at it, let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about this because we got a difference in the team. Let's talk about this because I mean, they used Dobbs heavily in the run game. And they've got two and a half mobile quarterbacks in there, true freshmen this year coming in. Right, they're all on campus now, actually. So, I mean, if worst comes to worst, they could just go a heavy quarterback run package. I mean, they could do that. And they've got the defense this year that looks on paper anyway to be able to, you know, keep games a little close on that side of the ball as well. So, I mean, there's not going to be a lot of 80-yard downfield passes with Dobbs either. There's nobody to stretch the field. So you get somebody to dink and dunk some passes and take off running when they need to take off running on the read option. They could compete. I mean, I'm not going to just count them out. There's a lot of weak teams they're going to face in that East and on that schedule. They got three built-in wins. So three built-in wins out of conference. I think any of those quarterbacks get through. Western Carolina, North Texas, and Bowling Green. And then you have Kentucky and Vanderbilt. That's five.
Well, the thing is, you know, you and I are both kind of on the group of, with the Florida game, it's hard to pick Tennessee until they actually beat them. I think Dobbs was injured and played and you had Dormady or Sharon Jones or Juwan Jennings starting against Florida in the Swamp, they would crumble. And I'm not saying, you know, like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's
they'd
a
be deer in the head
by SEC road game. Oh, yeah.
One last thing, like, you know, people keep saying, you know, Neyland's one of the toughest places to play. It's getting back to where it used to be, but I think a lot of teams now don't care. Okay, cool, you guys are going to sing Rocky Top and play Little John every other snap. Fine. It's annoying. But if gun to my head, if you said what's a more intimidating environment to go into, the Swamp or Neyland, I would say the Swamp every time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, remember the old NCAA games before Ed O'Banion ruined them. You know, they had, you know, stadium rankings, like home field advantage. You know, back for years, Tennessee was in that top 25, but towards the end, they started to put Tennessee in the 20s. I remember, like, I think it's like NCAA, like, 09. Neyland was, like, the third toughest stadium to play in that game. And, like, 2 years later, they were like, 20, 21.
Yeah, drops like a rock. I remember that. God, I love that game. I miss it. It's crazy. It's not available anymore.
We can't use the language anymore, but I can abbreviate
no.
F you, Ed O'Banion. You've ruined everything.
Yes, for life.
To sell
forever.
To sell charcoal. You soulless jerk.
There's no excuse. No excuse for that. He got everybody. He got everybody to be able to do a class action lawsuit and file for their $8. I'm sure they're real appreciative of that, Ed. But that's just absurd. Let's get back to this list.
Yeah, sticking with this list, like I said, I'm going to cherry pick some. I think this is one we'll both agree on. Stephen Griffin, likely going to be a red shirt or a special team contributor, so probably towards the 20s, right?
Yeah, early 20s, late 20s, yeah, mid-20s. He'll probably contribute on special teams.
Chance Hall, I'm going either redshirt around an 18 or 19, plays if somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, I think he's going to redshirt. I mean, he is a tackle. And with Richmond there, Jack Jones there, and the other guys that are already penciled in as starters, unfortunately, Kendrick and Kerbison. I mean, there's just no need to burn his redshirt. Let him heal that Achilles up another year.
Well, and the same thing, you know, you mentioned Jack Jones. That's the next guy I was going to bring up. I have Jack Jones high teens, you know, around 13, 14, just because I think the talent's there. If first game somebody gets hurt or first game that Kyler Kerbison, you know, pulls his ATL and puts his roller skates on, he's out. So I think Jack Jones doesn't play major minutes, but I think he's going to be a solid sub this year as a freshman.
I think so, too. This is the thing. We're going to probably see the Vols up on some of these teams, like the Western Carolinas and the North Texases and the Bowling Greens and maybe even the Vandys and the Kentuckys. They're going to be up a substantial amount in a lot of these games or several of these games. And you don't want to have your starters kind of lumbering around out there in the late third, early fourth quarter, and you got 40 points. So why not mix in Jack Jones? I'm sure he'd rather get in there and get some dirt on him You know, Butch has a tendency to play his backup lineman on the special teams, function anyway, punt team and field goal anyway. So I think he'll get some of that on him anyway, plus a little mop up duty too, just to have a, you know, just to have a little depth. I mean, because they've got it this year. They've got about 13, 14 scholarship linemen now.
And I think we're going to see it against Bowling Green in Nashville. I think we're going to see a lot of freshmen play late in the game because, Tennessee's going to win that game. They're going to put up some points early, I think, just to get it, build a nice cushion. And there's two reasons I believe this, that we're going to see a lot of freshmen play towards the end of that Bowling Green game. One, it's an opportunity for them to get game experience. And two, Tennessee loves tweeting how much their freshmen play.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. they're going to be at full midnight saying, 18 freshmen played on Saturday, blah, 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 blah. Tennessee loves promoting that.
Yeah, well, let me do it this way also. You're in the mid-state. That's an area you're trying to own in recruiting. You tout that all the time. You had a freaking billboard last year. So what better chance up 40 in the fourth at LP Field than to put in Jack Jones, Murfreesboro, Juwan Jennings at quarterback, Murfreesboro, Kyle Oliver, tight end, Kyle Phillips probably start. I'm just saying, what better opportunity to get these kids out there in front of their hometown folks that are in the stands? It would be great exposure. Another thing about you mentioned the Jennings being like 29th or something like that. I would, if I was Dormady or Jones, I wouldn't want to burn my red shirt. I'd say, hey, make throw Jennings in there. He probably wants to play and get a little dirt on him. He wanted to go live at the spring game, let him get in there and run around in the fourth quarter, just, get some experience. I mean, why not? I wouldn't want to burn my red shirt if I was one of those guys.
I'm trying to pull it up because, you and I have talked about it, that the in-state talent – in the 2016 class isn't good, but
No. The
2017 class has some talent in it. And I'm trying
it's
to find the list.
Really,
just
crazy. It's going to be a huge year next year.
Yeah. But so it's interesting. I agree with you on, I think we're on the same page that they're going to play a bunch of freshmen because, that game's going to be nationally televised with ESPN. Or somebody's going to think it's a big deal if they're playing at LP Field. But the mm-hmm. thing is with it, like I said, Tennessee loves promoting how much their youth is. You saw it after the first game. They put out that image of all the, 21 freshmen that played in the opener last year. Like, all these guys mm-hmm. played. They're going to do that again. UT's marketing and media department loves promoting that stuff, even the smallest stuff. And you see Butch Jones continue to push the youth card, and we're going to discuss that in a minute because he did it again this weekend. I know you and I are part of hashtag Team No Excuse this season.
Mm-hmm.
But still sticking with our list a little bit. This one's going to be fun. He's going to be enrolling probably next month. He's going to be in the second session of the summer, running back John Kelly.
Yeah. I think he's got to be top 10, really. You've got to have a third running back. And I don't like the transfer Abernathy in that role. That's just like another Devlin Young. But I feel bad for Kelly, because the only reason he's not going to make this first session is just because his high school doesn't graduate until the 9th or something. So the session starts tomorrow. Session starts tomorrow, so he's going to miss because of this awful luck of his high school graduation being pushed back. I don't know if they had snow days or what up there, but he could try to get out early and couldn't.
Yeah, I agree with you. John Kelly's going to have to play. Ralph Bader at Abernathy, coming down from Cincinnati. Was he a package deal to get his brother? Maybe. But, like you said, he's another Devrin. He's very small. Might be returning kicks. But
yeah,
Ralph David's probably not going to play. This one's going to be fun to talk about. Big, big pickup at linebacker. Darren Kirkland Jr. obviously has the pec issue, was out for the spring. I have him in the top 10.
I can see that. I can see that. He's already actually ahead of schedule. He's already lifting. He'll be ready. He'll be ready for the field in the fall. So I hope he can contribute, because the linebacker situation is still pretty bad in the middle.
Another guy, you mentioned him. I saw you tweeting somebody about him this week. Defensive tackle Quay Piku. I've got him in the 20s.
Yeah, I do too now. I had hoped the young man could get in there, but I think he's actually the only one now, I think, having some sort of admissions issues, maybe, and grades issues. Not saying he won't come in. He just wasn't able to get it all completed and ready. I guess he had some courses that didn't translate. So he'll be there in July, hopefully, and if not July, then that last fall. He'll be there in the fall, I guess, either one. So, I had hoped he would. I want him to work all those big nasties in. I don't care. I want to work them all in. I want a rotation of fresh, big 280-pound to 320-pound animals in there, and that's what you got to have in the SEC, I think.
A couple guys that I think you and I are going to agree on that I can just rapid fire through that are probably, you know, top three, top five, Justin Martin and Drew Richmond. They're going to play this year.
Starters, hopefully. I hope they're starters, both of them.
I think Justin Martin's day one starter.
I hope so. He's not a freshman. He's a JUCO kid, so we got a question.
Yeah.
About him in freshman. He's actually not a freshman.
He'll be a sophomore. But with Justin Martin, I think, you know, I said it earlier in the show, I think he's day one, opposite corner from Cam Sutton. I think he's leaps and bounds better than Emmanuel Mosley.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your other corner, Drew Richmond. Same thing. I don't think he starts the first game, but I think there's a slip up on tackle, either left or right, he's in there.
I think Richmond's ready to roll. I mean, the stuff he's been saying publicly in some of these interviews he's been doing lately about how he expects to be the starter. That's the way you want your incoming five-star to talk. Physically, he's better than any tackle on the roster, the way I see it. And also, he's more technically sound than any incoming freshman tackle that I've ever seen. Like, you know, I'm old. I don't think you really have to rehash that with anybody. I'm an old guy. But I can't think about being this technically sound as a tackle coming out of high school into the program. I thought about Munoz because he was very technically sound, but Richmond is a way better athlete than Munoz. You know, Munoz, the son of a former tackle, he came up with, you know, under the tutelage of his father, so he was technically one of the most sound guys I've ever seen. But this kid is way more technically sound than even Munoz, and he's a better physical specimen. Can you recall a better looking tackle coming in out of high school to the university
than Drew Richmond? No,
it's crazy.
Kids,
I mean, Tiny was a physical specimen, but he wasn't nearly this technically sound, and, you know, yeah, he's not as good an athlete, and he obviously had well-documented knee issues, you know, now, but.
The last two, technically three guys I want to talk about, Lee. First one, Preston Williams, obviously coming back from the ACL injury, tweeted a video this week of him running in the indoor facility. Looked good. But where do you put him? I mean, if you're the coaching staff, do you play it safe with him and maybe redshirt him, which we've seen on Twitter he doesn't want? Or do you say, hey, let's get you some reps in there and give you a couple snaps? You know, like I said, 1 to 29. How much does Preston Williams contribute?
Well, I don't want the kid rushed in there, to be honest with you. I mean, ACLs are no joke, and he wants to contribute, let him get out there. But if he's spending more time in the tub recuperating after practice and scrimmages and stuff than he should be as a freshman 18-year-old kid, I mean, they have to do what's in his best interest and put the shirt on him whether he wants it or not. Now, and I know that he's an unusual kid. And I don't know how to respond to that. So it should be just entertaining to watch how the whole process plays out.
These next two guys are same position group. One had made news this week. And I've got one last guy to talk about. You've got Tommy Townsend, the kicker/punter from Florida, as well as Nathan Renfro transferring in from Maryland as a graduate senior. Renfro averaged around 41 a punt while as the starter at Maryland. Who's the punter next year? Does Renfro
based on experience? There now. The only walk-ons there now. So they've got three folks in the competition, and it just boggles my mind. I would hope that this freshman would be the punter, you know, getting 4 years of experience in there and not have to worry about it for, you know, looking at another punter for 2-3 years. But just to burn more than one scholar on a punter just flies all over me. Well, I don't even want to get into that. We'll veer off into some anger issues with mine. I don't even want to get into that because we have like five scholars tied up in punters and kickers now if the Maryland transfer gets a scholarship. So that just drives me nuts to begin with. It shouldn't be that big a deal to beat out a 41-yard average. I mean, that's not exactly Ray Guy numbers right there. So, I mean, the 41 yards per punt average is nothing that, like, stood out to me. I don't know why they would waste a scholarship on that.
Well, speaking of scholarships that may or may not be wasted, this is something you and I have been talking about since we started Checkerboard Radio back in September. Rank him 1-29, long snapper Riley Lovingood.
He better be number one. He better make every long snap from the moment he steps on campus to the day he leaves, if he's been given a scholarship for that. He better be number one. He better be in the first game and play however many, 48 games or whatever, until he leaves. I mean, he better be in every one of them if he's getting a scholarship for that.
So you want him to beat out GM Papa when he gets on campus?
Yeah, I do.
Well, the thing that's interesting, in 24/7, and Wes Rucker pointed this out, Lovingood's been working with Nathan Renfro, the punter from Maryland, for the past couple months.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see anything in that article from Wes if he is going to be given a scholarship here. I don't know that. So I'm only speculating. But if he is, that's going to put a mud on that number. We were talking about long snapping, and we were just talking about Drew Richmond and Michael Munoz coming out of high school. You know, Munoz used to long snap at his high school. Why don't linemen do that anymore? What's the problem? Why can't a lineman just take up long snap?
Well,
why doesn't the center just long snap? What happened to that? That used to be the norm.
I agree with that. When I played high school ball here in Knoxville, like, one day, and this isn't even a joke, our coach was like, hey, like, we were wrapping up practice, and he said, stick around if you want to try to see if you can be the long snapper. And, like, I thought it was funny. Obviously, you know, I'm a skinny white guy. I played receiver. So I was like, I'll do it. Like, I just did it just to, like, waste time and just be funny, I thought. And so I tried long snapping, and they were like, no. But, that's the one thing you and I have talked about. You know, why aren't these kids? I'm going to say something, and some random ass long snapping coach is going to hear it and get in a battle with me on Twitter because I've done it before about how I don't take it seriously. But
there's a special teams you or something Twitter account that's like favorited some of my slander on long snappers before, just randomly. They're like, they're searching for long snappers. They search the word long snapper and like favorite something negative. I say it's the funniest thing ever on Twitter. I love name searchers.
Yeah, and they host a camp. Like, if, you know, years down the road, if my child plays football and he decides, hey, Dad, can I go to this long snapping camp? I am never going to pay $50 to $100 for my child to go to a long snapping camp. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. But what's the thing? Why can't these linemen, like, why can't Drew Richmond? Why can't Jack Jones? Why can't Zach Stewart? I guarantee all of those guys have done at least one long snap in their life. And the way you and I have talked about it is with Riley Lovingood. If you're getting a scholarship, full-on scholarship over, you know, Vincent Perry or Jock Bruce, who are blue-shirting, and, you know, it's implied that they'll get a scholarship next year, but hell, if one of them blows a knee out this year, that scholarship's not going to be there. That's called the real world, kids.
We need to get an active coach on. Maybe we can get Terry Bailey back or something. We need to get an active coach on. We can call a friend of the show. We can just get real quick to have him come on and explain to us why a kid that's playing center in a spread offense that's doing 99% shotgun snaps can't also long snap. Why is there a difference there? It's not much difference. Why they're already doing shotgun snaps? Why can you not just target that a little lower for a field goal kick or a little further back for a punt? What could possibly be the difference? You know.
Well, and the thing I compare loving it to, and I've said it before, it's kind of like I don't like basketball that much, especially the NBA. I like college basketball, but I'm not a huge fan or follower of it. But, like, with the NBA, with what they get paid, I've always said, you know, if you miss a free throw, you get fined $1,000. I'm dead serious. If you're a professional basketball player making $20 million a year to play basketball, if you can't miss a shot that literally includes the word free in it, you get fined $1,000. But
then you'd have like a 30-for-30 special on Shaq about how he had one of the largest NBA contracts in the world and lost it all because he couldn't hit a free throw. He's like show Shaq showing the contributor or something because he couldn't hit free throws.
Well, and then and like I said, I compare that to Lovingood. I'm not bashing the kid. I'm sure he's great. I said that about Cody Glenn. But with Lovingood, if you are getting a scholarship, like I said, over Vincent Perry or Jock Bruce, you know, skill positions that are walking on essentially because they're getting blue shirts. If Riley Lovingood is getting a full ride, every snap to me better be perfect. If I see one botch snap from him, I want him to come off the field and they say, bye, Felicia. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I saw yesterday, well, these kids are all getting their numbers now. And I know I saw Riley still hadn't gotten his, so at least they're making him, at least they're not letting him choose a number. You know, like Khalil got number one, and Cortez Sapp was happy he got number 14. And at least they're not letting Riley choose his number. Like, what if Riley came in and, like, demanded, like, the number four or something? I mean, just, or 16, let him have Peyton's number. So just, it would be, I'm just glad they're not letting the long snapper choose his number. He has to take what's left. I hope it's like 57 or some weird, obscure number on his 240-pound frame. So
he has double zero.
Yeah, but they're putting it over there.
And I can't think of a time, Tennessee's done it twice now under Bush Jones, offer a scholarship to a long snapper. Last year, the kid decommitted and went to Oklahoma. But
yeah,
if you're a long snapper, that's like your one. That's your one job. You can't. You're
you had
not
one
a tackle.
Job.
No, I mean, if you're not a tackle, you're not a guard, you're not a center, you're not a D tackle. Your listed position is snapper. If you mess up once and you're on scholarship, and I know some, like some long snapping coach is listening, like, well, what if a receiver drops the ball? Should his scholarship be pulled too? No, but if your one specified job is to snap a ball 12 yards behind you, maybe at most 5 or 6 times a game, you better do that perfectly.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You're saying that some guy actually compared the wide receiver position to being a long snapper and dropping a pass?
Well, somebody did it on Twitter with me a couple months ago, and I was making fun of the offer for Lovingood. And
that's crazy.
He was like, oh, would you pull a scholarship for a quarterback if he threw an interception? I'm like, no, because quarterback.
Oh, my God.
Like, this guy was, he was like, I was a long snapper at Southeast Louisiana State in 95. I was like, cool, dude. Don't tell people that. No one cares.
Man, there's so much. Literally. Well, the only person that has less to do or less responsibility than a long snapper is the punter. Punter has one job. He punts the ball. That's all he does. The long snapper actually has to do field goal snaps and punt snaps. That's all they have to do. And they have to block a little bit afterwards, just like sparingly. They basically just stand up, put their hands up in front of them. But those two are the least involved positions on the team, kicker, punter, and...
Well, as we've got about 5 minutes left, Lee, one of the things that I haven't ranted in a while, and we said we'd bring it up a little bit, is local media adding coaches, namely Hugh Freeze, on Twitter and trash-talking with them. I love both of these guys. I've worked with both. I've known, been a friend with one since high school. But my good friend Houston Kress at Rocky Top Insider and my good friend Seth Stokes at 1180 in the Swain event need to stop with that.
Yeah.
And the reason I say it is, one, it's stupid. And two, I can't think of, and it just might be Vol Nation, that if there's something in our blood that we love trash talking, but I have never seen a media member outside of Knoxville troll a coach at a different institution.
I haven't either. And let me just say this too. I haven't either, but I'm not really in a position to see it because I wouldn't notice it unless somebody pointed it out to me. But I can see it from the folks I follow, and this is just opinion. And folks can do what they want to do, but I feel the same. If you're a media member, like an official media member, you get to go to media days. You get to go to the press room or the press box. You get to interview some of these coaches when they play the university. You shouldn't ever have an opportunity to just troll them on Twitter because you may be asking a question of them one day that you might need an answer for. It's just common sense to me. But I mean, I know I love those guys that RTI and Houston's my dude. So he says he's new media. That's what he says. So if he's new media, that's cool. But just like regular old fashioned. Garden variety definition media, I don't think they should be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I get being a fan and covering it. I mean, obviously, you know, I was with TSR for almost 2 years, and, you know, I'm a Tennessee fan. I tried to be, and I still continue to be, you know, as partial as I can be. I like to call a spade, but my thing is with what happened with the Hugh Freeze thing today, or this week, excuse me, of him tweeting out the bowl ring they got for losing the Peach Bowl. You know, everybody was making fun of them. Like I said, Houston and Seth were tweeting at Coach Freeze. Freeze has actually blocked Houston. But Seth got into it with this is my second part of my rant. Seth got into it with an Ole Miss fan. The Ole Miss fan pulled the scoreboard card. The Ole Miss fan pulled the scoreboard card. And
that wins.
And God bless him. Seth pulled the, well, we won the recruiting battle for Drew Richmond card. And I sat there and watched it. And it was like slow motion, like when you're about to see, you know, somebody get a car wreck because they're texting or something. And you're just like, no, don't do that, don't do that. Seth, I love you, buddy, but don't pull a recruiting battle card over a win-loss. All that matters is that scoreboard. Way I read it, and I'll call into Swain on Monday and make fun of Seth about it, but the way I looked at it is Tennessee could have gone 1-11, and Seth pulled up, well, we got this recruit, though, card.
Here's the deal, dude. You can't. I mean, if you're gonna, this is just me talking. I'm not in the media. I'm not a media member. I'm a talk show co-host. That's what I'm doing on here. You write articles for the website. I don't really get into a lot of that. I might throw something on there and put up just for people to see my opinion. I'm more of an opinion guy, so I don't pretend to be media. So. It's not the same for me, but I think if you have a radio show and you write articles for certain publications, you shouldn't probably be trolling folks that you may have to brush up against in your profession at like a SEC Media Days event. I mean, it's just common sense to me, but new media, you know, it is what it is, I guess. New day.
Last thing before we wrap up, SEC put out their new rules this week. The biggest one is, and it was pointed out to me and Lee, the SEC is not allowing players that have had a history of sexual assault or domestic violence to enroll at SEC schools. I almost want to call it the Saban rule with that D tackle they just had. But, mm-hmm. I mean, Lee, do you think that affects Tennessee any? Or, I mean, I don't think Tennessee really goes after guys that have that history.
Yeah, it hasn't up until this point affected them. It may make them look internally, I think, a little bit about actually allowing some of these folks that are involved in some of the issues that are currently on the team and suspended indefinitely. It may mess up their path to come back. I know this is strictly a transfer rule, and did you ever find out if it was going to be for convictions or just charges, or what was the what's the criteria? Did you ever dig down and drill down into that?
I read the rule, and the way I interpreted it was, and the rule kind of explains it out, if they've ever faced disciplinary action from the school they were at. So, for example, okay. If a kid from North Texas got suspended for a week for smacking his girlfriend or something, he wouldn't be allowed to transfer to an SEC school. I think the way I put it is, if your team or college has ever suspended you or, pulled your scholarship because of a domestic violence or sexual assault issue, you're not playing in the SEC.
Okay, well, let's personalize it. It's like, let's say, Michael Williams. He's been suspended for being charged. Say if he gets off the charges and then wants to transfer to Vanderbilt next year, he can't do that. So, yeah, I mean, that's a rule that could affect Tennessee.
Well, and that's the thing. I think it's a good move. I think it's progress to quit giving chances to these kids. And, I wrote about it on the website with the Trayvon Polk issue. And Butch just says it. Playing football at Tennessee is a privilege. And I agree with that as a fan.
Yeah.
So if you weren't charged, like, for example, as Trayvon Polk hasn't been charged, but the audio on that, I'm sorry, man, you're guilty in my eyes.
Yeah, it's enough to make the university be in a bad position nationally. So that being said, it's a privilege. You shouldn't get a second chance. It's a privilege. That's the way I was always raised to believe that. I mean, it's a privilege. You lose your privilege. You're still able to go out and get a job and be a productive society, a society member, but you don't get to go back and have the ice cream, too. The ice cream's gone now. You lost the ice cream.
Well, Lee, that wraps us up for today. And podcast will be up shortly, along with a couple articles on checkerboardradio.com. Make sure to be on the lookout in the next week or so, we will announce our partnership with V Sporto and the other shows that will be listed on their free app, Ball Sport Radio, that they are launching. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we're really excited about it. It's another new way for you guys to listen to Lee and myself. Lee, parting thing. When does Fear the Walking Dead start?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. They're talking about actually debuting some scenes from it at some sort of Comic-Con type deal in July. So we're probably looking late July now. They were. I was hoping early June, but it looks like it's going to be late July. But it'll be in time to run the 6 episodes into the new season of The Walking Dead from what I read like yesterday. So.
Well, and we also do want to welcome a new member to Checkerboard Radio family. There's another one joining the week. We've got a new kitten that Lee saved. And next week, Kendall Pug joins the Checkerboard Radio family. So we're excited about that. Lee out there being the cat whisperer, saving stray animals in Nashville. This has been Checkerboard Radio. Check out checkerboardradio.com later today. He's Lee Crow. I'm Andrew Derego. Everybody have a good Sunday.
3, 2, 1.
Checkerboardradio.com.
Oh.
CheckerboardRadio.com.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, I ain't never coming home no more. Take it easy.